Five, four, three, two, one. I'm John Minglash for the WDMA. It's the end of it, behind the Christmas tree. And we're going to be talking about AI and direct mail today. But first, let's get over to the announcement, which is that we're going to have a WDMA winter welcome. Welcome, winter. We're welcoming winter. It was in the 20s today on the motorcycle. Yeah, it's really cold. It makes you feel alive. I figure I used to snowmobile as a kid. I could probably manage to ride the motorcycle in winter, so I do. But it's invigorating, let's just say. Wakes you up. Wakes you up better than coffee, which is percolating in the background, if you can hear that. I don't know. Anyway, so we're going to be talking. We got about 8 or 9 people already signed up, and which is really great because we have some great people. And Phil Weiland messaged me, which, you know, he's a legend, forever legend. And when I told my wife that, she said, "Oh, you're a legend too, honey." I said, "Yeah, right. Okay, maybe someday. Maybe when I'm dead and everyone else says, he was not a bad guy. He really fought for mail." Anyway, and Phil invited me to work with him on something that we could send to the post office or the incoming administration or something. I said, "Yeah, I'd be all in on that. Maybe he'll come. I don't know. We'll see." But Mike Gunderson said he's coming, and he shared it out there, and I hope his people come too. He's got some great stories. There was a case study that I wasn't able to read a month ago, and I really am curious about it. I'll try to dig that up. But we're going to be talking about mail, and we're going to be talking about why. And the post office, you know, I hope some postal people come. I'm going to go out of my way to invite them. But the post office doesn't understand that mail has unique properties that actually go with AI. We'll talk. Maybe I'll do another live stream. Can you believe it? I did 5 years. I didn't miss one day of live streaming. 5 years. Monday through Friday, every day, you know, except holidays. But even holidays, mostly. And you'd think you would remember everything, but it's taken me like 3 days to get ready to do this. So I apologize. I keep talking. Anyway, let's go over to Tom Fishburne to start. Okay, but mark it down. The 3rd of December, 3 p.m. Chicago time. If you go to my LinkedIn page, you'll find the link. It's a LinkedIn event. If you go to WDMA, if you just search WDMA on LinkedIn, you'll get the Window and Door Manufacturers Association. That's not it, but you'll also get the Wisconsin Direct Marketing Association. And there's a link there that you can click to register. And that's helpful because it lets other people see that, you know, they're not going to be just alone sitting there talking with me and my Christmas trees. So I encourage you to click that you're attending. And then LinkedIn will send you a reminder. It's really great. It just took me days to figure it out again, although I've used it before. So anyway, over to Tom Fishburne. AI-generated homogeneity. Okay, that's big words. Okay, but here's a great illustration of it, Tom. Once we train our AI, I can't wait to see the variety of new ideas it comes up with. So they got all these bottles going, you know, that they're making, and AI looks it over and makes them all the same size, which would save money, I'm sure, but somewhat different colors, but not nearly the variety of colors that there was before that. And so Tom writes, "It's still early with AI generation tools. We're still learning the potential and limitations. One watch out is the bias toward homogeneity. That means making everything the same. The tendency for AI results to look alike. As AI predicts what to generate, the path of least resistance is an averaging of the content in its source material." It's a little more sneaky than that, actually. Maybe we'll talk about that when I finish the article. Okay, Ian Whitworth once referred to it as the great samening. ChatGPT, Jasper, and all the rest are powerful conformity machines. You don't think about that when you first start. Giving the ability to churn out Bible-length material about yourself and your business that's exactly the same as your competitors. A couple months ago, Oxford and Cambridge researchers illustrated the risk, and he has a link there to the article, which will be available on WDMA.org, the show notes, and the podcast. We'll upload the podcast. I haven't done this in months, so, you know, heaven help me, but I'll figure it out. The risk of homogeneity in a study of AI-generated content in Nature magazine. The risk increases as AI gets trained, and more so, not only on human-created content, but on other AI-generated content. And this is great because he gives an illustration. As an example, the researcher studied an AI model trained on images of different breeds of dogs. Okay? The source material included a naturally wide variety of dogs, French bulldogs, Dalmatians, Corgis, Golden Retrievers, etc. But when asked to generate an image of a dog, all the AI model typically returned the more common dog breeds, like Golden Retriever, okay? And less frequently, the rarer breeds, like French Bulldogs. Over time, the cycle reinforces and compounds, okay? When future generations of AI models are trained on these outputs, it's important to remember, when they start cycling on their own output, it starts to forget the more obscure dog breeds entirely. Soon it only creates images of Golden Retrievers. Okay? But then it gets worse. Eventually, the researchers found there's model collapse, where the LLM, the large language model, is trained so much on AI-generated Golden Retriever images that the results turn into nonsensical and stop looking like dogs at all. Amazing. Now, substitute dog breeds for whatever you're trying to create, new product packaging, advertising, communication, and the risk is that all outputs devolve to look the same. A related study from the University of Exeter found that AI generation tools have the potential to boost individual creativity, but with a loss of collective novelty. The good news is that this baseline situation creates opportunities for those who can push against the status quo. And the problem is, if you ask AI to prevent this, it doesn't understand what the essence of dog is, or the essence of chair. Go read Plato. What is the essence of dog? Dogness, right? It doesn't know. It has no clue. Zero clue. Whereas you ask a year-old baby or an 18-month baby, dog versus cat, and they'll get it. AI isn't a baby. It's not as smart. Okay? So homogeneity is ultimately at odds with distinctiveness and also with making any sense whatsoever. Okay? As with all tools, it's all in how you use them. You can't break through the clutter by adding to it. And so here are a few cartoons generated over the years. AI has revolutionized the way we create unique content for our audiences. And then they say, great point. AI has revolutionized. And then great point. AI has great point. AI has great point. They're all using message generators. The good news is we're generating lots of engagement on our AI-generated content. The bad news is it looks like most of the engagement comes from AI-generated traffic. The bots are liking the bots' work. Okay, have you figured out how AI will impact our business? How will AI impact our business? There are many ways that AI, right, off it goes. Okay, consumers want communication that's human, empathetic, and real. So hopefully our AI can learn to generate content like that for them. Yeah. Okay. And this is from 2017. I wanted to emphasize that. We're creating more content than our audience can actually consume. That's a good topic for our next blog post, white paper, infographic, listicle, and animated GIF. Don't I know? Right. Exactly. Thanks for that, Tom. Now let's get over to this one. This was an interesting article that I ran across yesterday. Kinesco ramps up scientific model, opens up experimentation lab. Okay, and I'm going to make this bigger. I think you can still see it, but this way I can see it. It can be as simple as testing different creatives, or it can be a bit more complex. Let's see if that, I can't see if it wrecked it or not, so I'm going to, I guess it did wreck it. So let's try and keep her face decent when I can still see it. Okay. Experimentation is a scientific methodology to validate hypotheses. And this is something I want to emphasize. Scientific method for validation of hypotheses. Okay? It can be as simple as testing different creatives, or it can be more complex, requiring us to test variations of multiple elements simultaneously. Okay? So I started pioneering this stuff with machine learning, with chi-squared SPSS algorithms back in 95, so almost 30 years ago, right? And it was totally unknown. Could we even use, I gave a talk in the 80s on, could we even use computers in marketing? Would there be any benefit to it? And when I gave the talk in New York City, I was the first person to hook up a computer to a monitor that everybody could watch what I was doing. Very first one in the New York Hilton. He said, no one's ever asked us that before. Okay. So media inputs are increasingly opaque. High-speed experiments involving tens of thousands of tests to better understand which ones lead to better outcomes for clients, platforms, media, and creative executions. Okay. So Kinesco is doubling down on scientific methodology, utilizing all this high-tech stuff. And Berna Tollefson, that's Berna up there, Vice President of Experimentation. She's been there just a couple of months. She started in May. Experimentation is a scientific methodology to validate hypotheses. Again, she says, probably quoting that up there. The tricky part is, what is this about? How does this work? Well, it's the ability to continuously field massive, large-scale experiments in near real time, constantly testing hypotheses and reformulating them into best practices almost on the fly. So what, for example, might be a way, something we could test, okay? Because we want it to be purely scientific. We want a purely scientific goal of generating insights from some machine, right? The mission is identifying, testing, and understanding the full spectrum of inputs that better lead to outcomes for the entire marketplace. Now, what they're leaving out, and what I want to get at, and maybe I've been a little elliptical here, is they're leaving out, how do we decide what the hypothesis might be? And what would it take to test that? It isn't just about running thousands of experiments all at the same time. Okay, when I was in high school, physics, we took a little weight and it was attached to a paper tape, and we pushed the weight off the edge of the table, and there was a little pen that went like that real fast, and it made marks on the paper tape down to the floor, made, you know, and as the weight went faster, the marks got farther apart, and we could tell how fast it was accelerating, more or less. The tape had resistance, the air has resistance, you know, there were some factors. But in general, we could experimentally validate the acceleration of gravity. That was the point. Now, the question is, did that experiment give insight? Maybe to the high school student, but certainly not to science in general. You know, it's not the number of experiments that pushes science ahead. It's not the recreation of infinite numbers of confirming experiments. It's the outliers. It's the crazy stuff. And what people don't understand about models is that it's the crazy stuff that starts new businesses, that starts new divisions, that gives you explosive growth. And the AI, as we just learned from Tom Fishburne, will homogenize the results and eliminate the outliers. That's exactly what Tom just said. which means that the value, you might tweak your mailing results or your ad buy results a few percent, but the real big stuff, the stuff that makes you money, recommend my book, Spinning Straw into Gold, the stuff that makes you money is the crazy stuff. That's why the crazy scientists push it along. The people that come up with stuff that doesn't even make any sense, right? I saw a meme the other day. Two guys in a medieval bar, probably. One guy says, "You know, if we boiled down the horse, maybe we could glue stuff together." And the guy said, "Are you having problems at home?" Right? It's crazy. It sounds crazy, right? That somehow glue would be made from horses' hoofs. It's true. And cow, I think cow hoofs more even. Okay, so the ability to test isn't the key, at hyperspeed isn't the key. And here comes the example from Chris Skimcott. We have a hypothesis for our client that if you start spending in December, you're going to have way less competition. Start spending in December, you're going to have way less competition, and you're going to be top of mind by the time that January period rolls around. Is that true? I'm not even sure how you'd measure that. I mean, you could ask people. If you're going to spend millions of dollars, I suppose with test markets maybe, but of course then you could have the Pringle effect, where they spent millions of dollars in small markets and the Pringles just flew off the shelves and they said, wow, endless demand. And that wasn't what happened. The repeat buy, you know, they decided too early what was going on. And the repeat buy wasn't that great because people didn't, you know, Pringles are okay, but they're not, you know, they're great if you're on a camping trip because then they won't get crushed, but they're not that great otherwise. So they built bigger factories, they upped the budget tons, and they rolled it out nationwide, and they found out that people don't really like Pringles as much as they thought. They just caused a lot of commotion, okay? So the hypothesis is you can actually spend less money to drive a higher result. Yeah, hard to measure, very hard, unless you do holdout testing. Most people don't. And this lab won't necessarily do holdout testing because that's not testing certain things. So it's very, very complicated. You know, I have an MA in philosophy of science. I can help you with experimentation. I would love to have a conversation with Berna. I think it would be great. I think we could probably both learn a lot. I'm sure it's better than I'm making it sound, but caution advised. It's not the number of tests. It's not the repeatability of tests. That's part of it. It's the insight of the observation, which drives the hypothesis, which then helps design the experiment, right? And then you repeat it to confirm, and then you get to theory. I'm John Miglosh. Have a great day. Don't forget, go to WDMA.org or LinkedIn, WDMA, or my own posts, and click the link, and we'll see you on the 3 p.m. Chicago time. Bye-bye.